Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. With the UN Climate Change Conference in Glasgow looming ever closer, Andrew Marr spoke this morning to Alok Sharma, the president for COP26. Marr asked Sharma about what the UK government was preparing to do in order to meet its ambitious targets of zero carbon emissions by 2050.
You've promised that the UK will reach net zero by 2050, and I want to look at what that would mean. So, for instance, 15% of our emissions come from domestic homes. Will that have to end?
Well, we're going to be setting out a net zero strategy before COP26. We will address what we need to do across a whole range of sectors. But what I would say to you is that UK actually has been making progress. So on a 30-year view, we have managed to cut emissions by over 40% and yet managed to grow our economy by almost 80%. And so the point with this...
If we don't decarbonise our own homes, then you'll have real problems at COP for anyone else listening to us. In other words, we have to set an example, which is why I'm sticking on this. Mm. So I think something like 24.5 million homes in Britain have gas boilers. Do you need to get rid of all of those gas boilers and put in heat pumps instead?
Well, obviously, as people look to replace their boilers, there'll be alternatives available to them. This isn't about forcing anyone to do anything, Andrew. This is about providing incentives. In the same way that we are providing incentives for people, for instance, to take on electric vehicles. And the cost of these technologies is coming down significantly. So you've got companies like Octopus Energy, which are talking about halving the cost of heat pumps. So we will see this. We've seen this with every technology. I mean, look at the cost of solar.
If you're saying that we're not going to get rid of all of those gas boilers and we're not going to put in the insulation and so on, that's why protesters get so angry. And I put it to you that the reason that you can't give me answers on this is that it's simply eye-wateringly expensive. To remove a gas boiler and put in a heat pump costs around £10,000 per house.
Yeah.
And given that the average household income is about £30,000 a house, that is an eye-watering amount.
Well, and Andrew, as I said, I mean, you've got manufacturers like Octopus Energy who are talking about halving the cost from £10,000 to £5,000. And you've seen this with economies of scale. When you have scaling up, prices do come down. I'm confident that will happen. But actually, there are two aspects of this. One, of course, is ensuring that we are supporting people as they make this transition. The other is the whole agenda of levelling up.
The business secretary has been in emergency talks with energy companies after the price of gas reportedly surged by as much as 70% in August alone. Amid warnings that this kind of increase could threaten Christmas, Marr asked Sharma if the situation could be brought back under control.
On the eye-watering increase in gas prices, should people now be bracing themselves for the possibility of shortages of frozen food and other products?
Well, Andrew, I mean, people, of course, will be very concerned by what they're reading in the papers, what they're hearing on the news. But you will know that the business secretary has been having very detailed discussions over the weekend. He'll continue those on Monday with the sector. And I think the clear message that has come out so far is that people shouldn't be concerned about the risk to supply. In fact, a significant part of our gas supplies comes domestically. The imported gas primarily comes from countries like Norway. So we are secure in that. But of course, when it comes to prices, there will be concern as well. But we have the energy price cap. We have the warm homes discount to protect people at this particular time.
If gas prices carry on rising, and it is an extraordinarily fast and big rise that we're seeing, would you remove the green energy cap?
Well, look, I think this is... Let's see where we are. I know that the business secretary is going to have these very detailed discussions, and we're not being complacent about this at all. But I think the clear message that I want to give to people is that we do not see risks of supplies right now, and prices are being protected.
Trevor Phillips also spoke to Sharma and asked him about the big fish that COP26 would like to see very firmly inside the net, President Xi of China.
You've got 100 leaders who've said they're coming. Has President Xi Jinping of China said he's coming?
No, not yet. But as you know, I was in China recently. I had constructive but very frank discussions with China. And of course, they've made various commitments on cutting emissions, on phasing down the use of coal. And I was very clear. I said to them that we want to see the detailed policy around this. And they, along with every other major economy, the G20, have committed before COP26, Trevor, to come forward with ambitious plans to cut emissions. And I have to say to you that in every conversation I had with the Chinese, they were very clear. They were very clear that they want to see COP26 as a success. So the ball is very much in their court.
Phillips turned to the matter of AUKUS, the new defence partnership between Australia, the UK and the US that was announced earlier this week. Though not explicitly aimed at doing so, AUKUS is widely seen as an attempt to push back against Chinese dominance in the Pacific.
Your heart must have sunk this week when the Prime Minister and Mr Biden and Mr Morrison announced a new deal and the French went a bit crazy about it and the Chinese denounced it as irresponsible. It's not the best diplomatic environment, is it, to get a deal?
Well, look, I mean, this is a trilateral deal between three very close partners. This is about the Indo-Pacific. And we've been very clear. This isn't about provoking anyone. We want to have good relations with all countries. We want to work with mutual trust with all countries.
But in terms of my role... Whatever you wanted,
well,
they are provoked.
In terms of my role, Trevor, what I can tell you is that I personally have spoken to world leaders, ministers in over 100 governments, and there is a very unified view on this. They do see climate change as an issue which is a great leveller. Climate change does not respect borders, and countries individually see what is going on in their own country. I mean, you've seen, literally in the last few weeks, the horrific flooding that's been in China, in Central Europe, loss of life and livelihoods. You've seen wildfires raging in North America, record temperatures in Europe. This is all down to climate change, and that is why countries recognise that we need to act collectively and together, and why I am told by every country that I speak to is they do want COP26 to be a success.
Ma interviewed Sir Ed Davey, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, and queried him about the consequences for a party member who had worn a T-shirt describing a woman as an adult human female.
The reason I keep using that phrase, as I'm sure you know, is that one of your members, Natalie Bird, has been banned from standing as a Liberal Democrat in any circumstances for 10 years because she wore a T-shirt which had that slogan on it.
Well, we have complaints issues, which I'm not part of the totally independent, so I can't comment on an individual case. What I can say...
That is true, what I've just told you. And, you know, the Liberal Democrats used to be a tolerant, open party, keen for debate and keen, above all, for free speech. Now, you disagree with Natalie Bird. She disagrees with you, but with that single phrase, she has been cast out of your party. That's not liberal, is it?
Well, we absolutely believe in free speech, but we also believe that we need to protect human rights and we believe in equality. And the reason I do keep coming back to Boris Johnson, I'm going to make no apologies for that, is because Liberal Democrats have been working with other parties, people in Conservative Party and Labour Party who share our view. And when Boris Johnson came, that cross-party working ended. And I think that's really a shame because he's trying to divide people. We should be bringing people together.
I'm particularly interested in your views in this interview for obvious reasons. Do you think that everywhere in society, and I'm thinking of toilets, prisons, refuges, hospital wards, should be open to everybody, regardless of sex?
If you're a trans man, you should be able to operate as a man.
So the answer is yes to my question.
Yes. I mean, we've made it very clear. And what we're concerned about is there does need to be a debate in wider society, and that debate is not being had because of Boris Johnson's failure to lead. So
Philip spoke to the Green MP Caroline Lucas, seeking her response to the government's plan for COP26.
The first rule of diplomacy is to walk your talk. And yet both on the finance for climate and on the emissions reductions, this government is doing the opposite. It is absolutely outrageous that the government has cut our own aid budget by £4 billion and yet thinks it has the moral authority to lecture other countries about increasing their climate finance. We are in no position to do that when we have slashed our own aid budget. And when it comes to emission cuts, if you look at what government is actually doing, we are way off track in terms of meeting our own climate targets. The Committee on Climate Change, the government's independent advisers, says that we keep blundering into high carbon choices. You've got the Cumbria coal mine that you mentioned. You've got a new oil field being planned, the Cambo oil field off Shetland. You've got a £27 billion road building plan. You've got airport expansion. You've got the failure to put in place any kind of home insulation programme. The list goes on and on. So in terms of walking the talk, I'm afraid that Alok Sharma's very good efforts, I'm sure, at diplomacy are being cut off at the knees by the Prime Minister.
Phillips pushed Lucas on her attitude to the protests by Insulate Britain, a group whose demonstrations saw them blocking the M25 three times over the past week.
Just to be absolutely clear, you think this was a perfectly reasonable action. If they send you an invitation next time, you will be saying, yeah, I'll come and I will block the M25.
I am saying that in extreme situations, it is reasonable to take extreme actions. And that is what has driven these protesters to do that. Personally, I prefer to take action where it is closer to the target of that action. So that might be Downing Street, it might be the Treasury. But I fully understand why protesters have felt driven to do something more dramatic than that, because government has been ignoring all of those kinds of actions for many, many years. We face an existential crisis, an emergency, and we need to take emergency action now.
And finally, France's former ambassador to the US, Gerard Araud, made clear his frustration at the new AUKUS deal.
We have been undercut in what we considered as a very important political choice, and we have been undercut by our closest allies, in a sense. The way it has been done is amazing. You know, really, we were not consulted, we were not warned, and basically we were told through the TV. Think of it, you know, for months, British, Americans, Australians have been plotting in our back, basically saying, ha, we are going to take these contracts from the French. You don't behave this way between allies. Again, France has been the first European country active in the Indo-Pacific area. You know, right now you have aircraft carrier, British aircraft carrier there, but our aircraft carrier was there 3 years ago.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes Store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Evening Blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.